Welcome inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is Fantasy Sports Today. Happy Thursday. I'm Chris Meany. We are live here today. We're going to continue FanRag Sports Week. We're going to bring in Jim Finch, of course, from FanRag Sports. He's doing a lot of writing lately on the website, just overall strategies. We're going to look at the outfield position, talk about some undervalued guys, talk about just players who are maybe getting reached on, should they get reached on, all that good stuff from the outfield position. Plus, Melanie Newman, she's an in-game host. She's a field coordinator for MLB as well. We're going to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks as well as the Reno Aces, as she's very familiar with that club and she's following spring training right now. So we'll get some a little bit of tidbit news and notes of just players who are just performing really well to start. Of course, Peter O'Brien is going to be a focal point. But let's bring in Neil Parker from RotoWire right now. We're going to talk some hockey. But Neil, first, I know you're a big baseball guy. You've been playing fake baseball now for a long, long time. And just news broke that we came on here just before Neil, it was David Price dealing with an elbow injury. He's scheduled to see Dr. James Andrews, which is just never good news. It looks like there's growing belief inside the organization that he needs Tommy John surgery. I guess just your thoughts, and was Price even a target of yours heading into the year? Because last year, one of his worst, statistical speaking, one of his worst seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Ted DiBiase says, man, everyone's got a price, right? So, you know, if the time came in a draft, David Price would be a player I would consider. Like you mentioned, Dr. James Andrews, that's never a good name you want to hear as far as baseball players or any athletes are concerned. So you're going to need to stay tuned for updates throughout the coming weeks leading into your drafts. But one preference for me is that I just generally try to avoid injured players entirely until the end games of drafts. You're already going to deal with injuries, slumps, demotions, everything can come your way throughout the season. So when you invest a heavy draft capital into an already injured asset, it limits your lineup and roster flexibility. And in fantasy baseball, roster flexibility is one of the most important things you can use to your advantage. So put me on the very unlikely to draft David Price list right now, and we'll see what happens over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, fastball, 48% of the time is the amount he threw, which is a career low. It was sitting at 92 miles an hour, career low, 34.8% hard hit rate, career high for him, eighth in baseball among pitchers, and 30 home runs allowed, career high for him, tied for ninth in baseball. Just not good numbers, certainly concerning. Let's switch gears. Let's talk hockey. Let's talk about another Price and Carey Price. 10 games on the ice tonight. Neil, you've already wrote a lot about this matchup, other matchups tonight, plays on rotowire.com. You know what? Carey Price has been pretty good since the bye week, and you touched on it, I think, a couple games ago when he picked up a shutout, but this Nashville Predators team. Yes, you have PK returning to Montreal. That's the big spotlight. But Roman Josi, 12 games since returning from injury, 16 points, four multi-point games in a row. Philip Forsberg, 14 points in his last six, 10 goals in his last five. All this guy's doing is scoring right now. What do you make of this matchup? Are you going to continue to play these Predators, or does Price scare you away a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got to worry about Price. 945 save percentage, 1.56 goals against average through his past five starts. Three of those have gone for wins. Montreal is really struggling, though, man. I mean, they have zero regulation wins in February. They went 5-7-1. They averaged a league low 1.62 goals per game. So that's definitely concerning. And the Predators, they've surrendered the fewest high danger scoring chances per 60 minutes in the league. Just 8.4 at 5-on-5 this year. So I like that Victor Arvidsson, Ryan Johansson. I mean, the Predators have a really deep roster. I think this could be a low-scoring game, but I would. I think there's enough value and enough other matchups that you can look elsewhere in daily contests.
Let's talk about some of those other matchups. Yesterday was pretty, abysmal in terms of trade deadline. A lot of just third, fourth liners moving. You know, the two big names in Colorado did not move. Neil, we know that. It's probably more like an off-season move, Matt Duchene and Gabriel Landeskog. But the Avalanche is a team that we pick on a lot, and I'm sure you pick on them a lot as well. Going up against the Ottawa Senators tonight, is this a matchup that you're just going to stack some sends, pay up for the Carlsons and the Mike Hoffmans of the world?
Well, I definitely do love Carlson. We'll get to him in 1 second, but just to put it all out there, I mean, the Colorado Avalanche scored the fewest goals per game in the league. They've generated the least high danger scoring chances per 60 minutes in the league, and not only do they own the fourth worst team save percentage, but they also have allowed the most goals per game in the league. So after shipping out a few players, maybe not marquee guys, but still key cogs to a lineup, you'd really have to like the Ottawa Senators tonight. Craig Anderson, he's affordable at FanDuel for sure. He's won four of his past six starts with a 9.47 save percentage, 1.84 goals against average. And for what it's worth, the RotoWire lineup optimizer loves Mike Hoffman tonight. He's not that expensive, 6,500 at FanDuel, I believe. And while he's a little cool of late, you know, hasn't scored a whole bunch, his 2.19 points per 60 minutes at 5-on-5 over the past three seasons, ranked ninth among all skaters with at least 2,500 minutes. So he's definitely a nice value play, not quite as high as the top tier in price, but could easily provide a top tier return. And just quickly with Carlson, I mean, he's red hot of late. Two goals, 11 points, 29 shots, 24 block shots over his past nine games. You get the huge minutes. And in deep player pools like a 10-game slate provides, oftentimes daily players will look for value at defense, and that could leave Carlson a little bit under-owned.
Yeah, good call. A lot of people tend to do that for sure, like to spend elsewhere. Interesting. I just mentioned not a lot has happened in the trade deadline, but I was just really intrigued with what some of the moves Ottawa made. Just really some strange moves. Were you surprised about Alex Burrows?
Well, I mean, I think the acquisition's fine, but then when you go and re-sign him for two more years, a contract extension, that's a little nutty. I think I wouldn't be very pleased.
No, it could be the Canadians. You could be just drafting slow, big fourth liners or trading for them.
I'm not going there.
Let's move on to the Islanders. The Islanders have another great matchup in Dallas. They made a couple moves. Jordy Benn gone, Patrick Eves gone. It looks like this team is not going to make the playoffs. Islanders making a push right now. John Tavares paying up for him.
Well, I think he's in a torrid spot right now. You know, he's run 12 goals, 25 points, 84 shots through his past 22 games. And Dallas allows the third most high danger scoring chances per 60 minutes. And they've allowed the most goals per 60 minutes while shorthanded. So I like that New York Islanders power play tonight. And with Tavares, one way to mitigate his salary, because it is $8,000 at FanDuel, for example, and high across the industry, would be Nick Leddy. His 1.35 points per 60 minutes, ranked 15th among all defensemen with at least 3,000 minutes over the past 2 years, and he's the quarterback in the number one power play unit. So while he's a little bit slow right now, I think he has one assist through his past seven games. You know, this is a bounce back spot for him and a great spot for, you know, a sneaky stack with John Tavares.
Speaking of sneaky, we'll get you out of here on this. Give us a sneaky little play tonight in DFS. Maybe he's cheap.
Yeah, well, I love Kevin LeBanc. Really impressed with just what I've seen with my own eyes, and then knowing that he's just been an offensive dynamo at the OHL level. 70 goals, 234 points over his final 133 regular season games the past two seasons in the O. And he's posted a respectable 1.79 points per 60 minutes this season. Right now he's playing with Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, receiving second unit power play time, and it's not a bad matchup against the Vancouver Canucks.
I saw you tweeting about him the other night. Take it to LeBanc, bud.
Yeah.
Lineup.
Yeah. Straight to the bank. Kevin LeBanc.
We always appreciate your time, Neil. N.A. Parker 77 is where the folks can follow you and check out all of your work, of course, rotowire.com. Good luck on the ice tonight. Let's talk soon, bud.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
All right, you too, man. Okay, we're switching gears from hockey to the Diamond. Melanie Newman's in here next. We're going to talk all about the Arizona Diamondbacks. Stick around. Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. You're watching FST Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Chris Meany. We are live, and I'm very excited to bring in Melanie Newman. She's an in-game host. She's got many baseball hats, an in-game host. Melanie, I see you right there already in Arizona checking out Cactus League, talking some baseball. Before we get into the Diamondbacks, you're very familiar with the Arizona Diamondbacks, the whole organization, the Reno Aces. We're going to talk about a few players right there in a little bit, but you're a great follow on Twitter. You're tweeting all plays. If people are into just spring training and what's happening so far, I mean, you're giving out stats left, right, and center. So far, what have you seen? Is there a player that's really impressed you? It's like, yeah, he's ready to go.
honestly, that's going to come out more on the minor league end, and we're only 1 week in. I haven't really gotten to focus in on anybody in particular. I was excited to see Andrew Faulkner yesterday. He got through one pitch and got yanked for lightheadedness, so he's going to be a guy who waits for another day. I do have the doubleheader here at Salt River Fields today, and I have their game tomorrow, so really curious to see what they dig into as well. Let's see here. Across the board, I mean, there's just guys who are doing what they do. You had Trevor Plouffe the other day who just absolutely crushed a ball. Peter O'Brien, who has been a crowd favorite, he's got 3 home runs for the Royals already, and they're barely a week into spring training. And, you know, he's just doing what he does best, which is crush. But it's going to be really interesting to see who starts to really find that rhythm this first week.
Let's talk about him first. I was going to go in a different way, but you brought up Peter O'Brien, and you mentioned how he's just crushing in spring so far. I mean, he's got 3 home runs, tied for the most in baseball. And what we've seen from him, Melanie, and you know this, in the minor leagues, he just hits home runs. We saw a small sample size from him last year. He struck out a lot. But do you think he can play himself into a team on the big so far this, like, if he has a good spring and he cuts down on some strikeouts, can we see him this year on a consistent basis?
You know, I definitely think you could. The trade that the Diamondbacks made to get Sam Lewis and send him to Kansas City, honestly, was in favor of him. He had plenty of opportunities here in Arizona, but I think he'll have a bigger one in Kansas City because they have the ability to afford to play him every day. And that's going to be the big key, is making sure he's on that field every day. Now, the downside of that is, you know, they tried to play around with him a little bit. We've put him in the outfield. Now, he did well converting to an outfielder position, but you look at what the Royals have vying for that spot, it's not going to come easy to him by any means at all. I think, however, they're going to need that bat because at the end of the day, it's like you said, that's what he does. He just crushes baseballs at an unbelievable rate. So it'll be really curious to see where he goes.
Yeah, 20 plus home runs, 3 straight years in the minors, 5 in 28 games last season, but again, struck out a lot. All right, let's focus more on this Arizona team, this organization for this season. I noticed some changes in the offseason. They're bringing in some people, looking at analytics. And when I talked to you and I was actually looking at all the catchers in this organization, I had to double check with you. I see 16 catchers and 6 of them competing for a job. 3 former Angels, Josh Tolley, we're here in Toronto. Everybody knows about him. I mean, what's the whole feel there for the catchers? And is there a catcher that you think is going to run away with this job?
You did. So the thing is, the Diamondbacks made an absolute power move this year when they brought on the Pirates' Mike Fitzgerald. Now, Mike is huge, instrumental in changing the Pirates' whole lifestyle. They went from being the team that nobody wanted to be a part of, that couldn't get to the postseason, to breaking that 20-year curse because they had Mike, who's an MIT grad, but wants to be known as just a baseball guy. But he sat there and he looked at every single little detail. He's analyzing the slightest edge that he can get. Defensive shifts, pitch framing, and that's going to be huge. So you focus in on pitch framing now. You have these pitchers who are going to need that support this year. You saw last year with the Diamondbacks, you know, the run support was there, but every now and then you needed that little extra help. The ball that might have been a little far left, that could have been called a strike had you framed it right. So they've brought on a slew of catchers to kind of back up what Fitzgerald is looking at, which is that focused perfection on pitch framing. Jeff Mathis, you've got a veteran in the game. He's very intelligent. He has a good baseball IQ. Chris Herman, I think another guy who's going to break big league camp. He's a utility guy and he's a lefty, so that's going to come off big for him as far as making that himself an asset to the big league club. However, I think it's going to be Chris Iannetta, who reminds me of the Russ Martin, which is, again, similar to who Fitzgerald worked with. He's a workhorse, and when they talked to him before he eventually came to Arizona, he was bought in. They said, you know what, this is what we're going to do, and we're focusing on perfecting those small defensive tactics, and you've got to want it. And I mean, with a career 14.6 wins above replacement, he's going to be the guy who comes in and works for it every day. On the bubble with that, I think you've got Oscar Hernandez. In my opinion, he has the best hands out of any backstop that they have right now, but he still has to develop. He's still a kid, which is what a lot of people forget. So I think you might see him going back down to the Southern League with AA Jackson this year, since they've reassigned affiliates. And then you've got Tolley and Conger, and I think those are going to be those guys because they did sign the minor league contracts. They're great. But, you know, you've got others who are really, really pushing themselves. So the two of them might get assigned to Reno. Ronnie Freeman would be on the bubble as to where he goes. He did spend time between Reno and their AA Mobile the past year. So it's going to be a battle.
It is going to be a battle. I'm glad you brought up Robertson. I mean, he has a 21 home run campaign before in the minors. A small sample size, of course, only 11 big league at-bats. So that's, again, a small sample size. But just intriguing what Arizona's doing here. I'm looking at shifts. The Astros, over 2,000 shifts last season. Diamondbacks just in the middle of the pack, just over 1,000. So I guess we'll start to see that as the organization changes their philosophy a little bit. We only have a couple minutes here. I do want to get to some of the guys playing with Arizona, but I will touch on Archie Bradley with you just because this is a former first-round pick. He's still fairly young. We've seen him a little bit in the minors. His strikeout potential is real, has issues with the walks. But you mentioned, you know, before you got on here, just all the pitchers fighting for a position with Arizona. Is he one of them? And do you think that he can crack this five-man rotation to start the season?
You know, I honestly think he can. And for Archie, you nailed it. He is still a young kid. And the thing that's going to affect him most is he's still developing again. When he got hit in the head last year, not people realized how serious that injury was and how crucial it was during his moment of development. He was doing well. He was having his really first solid big league season. So to take an injury like that, it's just a heartbreaker, especially to watch from someone like him. Now he's coming back this year and he's kind of having to start that development process over again. A couple people have noted, you know, maybe he's not where he should be, but they're forgetting he lost 6 months out of his career last year. And just to have the gall to come back in the same season and face that and to figure out your timing again and to get everything back in order is going to be huge. I think if he has a good spring, he by all means is going to be on the starting rotation. But again, it's like you said, he's facing a stacked competition right now. So he's going to have to be on his A game and really start to figure out where he can pick back up.
Melanie, we only got about 30 seconds. So one more guy. It's a stacked rotation because Arizona made some moves and they acquired Taiwan Walker. He's already got some buzz in his first appearance. His two scoreless innings, he was fairly good. What's the feel in Arizona about this kid?
Everybody looks at him and they say, are you sure he's not a power forward in the NBA? The kid is bigger than you could ever imagine. You kind of have to see him in person yourself, but I think he's still definitely a prospect. I don't think that time in Reno would hurt him by any means at all, but we'll see what they're able to do with him here. He's coming in with a nice, fresh, young squad, so it's a good fit for him.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the only thing he's struggled with is just walks. I mean, the talent is there and some home runs, of course, but I mean, he's definitely a premier talent for sure. Melanie, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much. It's awesome to see people working out behind you. Enjoy the day, enjoy the rest of camp, and hopefully we can touch base soon.
Absolutely, Chris. Sounds like a plan.
All right. Take care. I'm Melanie Newman right there. Give her a follow on Twitter, especially if you just love hearing. I know it's only spring training, and not everybody cares about spring training stats, but she's tweeting about all the time and give you the extra edge in fantasy. Also the extra edge, Jim Finch. He's got it. Outfield strategies from FanRag Sports. We're talking all outfielders, overvalued, undervalued strategy. It's coming here next on FSD. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today on Fantasy Sports Network. We are live. I'm Chris Meaney. We're continuing FanRag Sports Week. Let's bring in Jim Finch, who's doing all kinds of coverage on the website, writing about strategies all the way from catcher to outfield to every position, Jim. So those at home really appreciate your time, and thank you so much for coming on here today to talk about outfield strategy. And let's get right to it. Let's talk about it, because I know Mike Trout, Mookie Betts are going early. Let's not spend too much time on that, but what's your strategy when it comes to drafting from this position?
For outfield, basically, I'm waiting to pass the first three rounds, so I don't plan on owning any stock in Mike Trout or Mookie Betts, any of the guys going in the first three rounds, because there's so much talent with in the first couple rounds between first base, third base, and shortstop that you're really doing a disservice to your team if you go for one of the outfield positions. If you pass on one of those positions early on, you're going to be behind the eight ball, and it's just a better overall strategy just to ignore outfield for the first two or three rounds.
Now, in the article you wrote about, like, AJ Pollock, George Springer, guys who are getting reached on a little bit, and you wrote that you felt that you would rather have an experienced guy who's done it year in and year out. And talking about Nelson Cruz, three straight seasons of 40 plus home runs, why would you rather have Cruz as opposed to maybe just somebody who could let you down because you're getting reached on as a Springer or a Pollock?
Well, if you look at the worst numbers for Nelson Cruz for the past 3 years, you get 87 runs, 93 RBIs, or sorry, 87 runs, 93 RBIs, 40 plus home runs, and a 271 batting average. I mean, that's his floor. You can't look at those both of those other players and say you're definitely going to get those numbers. So those are established numbers you're going to get from Nelson Cruz at a minimum. I know he's older. People have some bias towards older players. I'm sort of the same way, but the more you look at his numbers compared to those two guys, he just seems like the safest play out of all of them, and he's being taken several picks after them, almost at the beginning of round four.
Do you feel like George Springer could disappoint people? Do you think that he could be a bust?
He's right on the bubble. I mean, he's 27 years old, to where he's at an age to where players typically break out. But if you look at his contact last year, his contact went up, but it was still in the, going from bottom 10 to top bottom 25. It's not the best improvement you can make. The strikeouts are still high. He had 29 home runs last year, but he needed a league-leading 744 at-bats to get there, so I don't know if that's going to be there. So he's got the age to where he could break out, but his the number of at-bats he had last year combined with some of his underlying metrics, he could I wouldn't say disappoint. He's going to put up good numbers, but he's definitely not going to reach value for round three.
Yeah, he still has some strikeout issues, as you mentioned, the contact rate. It is certainly a concern for sure with George Springer. Okay, let's talk about some other people, because in the article, and you just talked about it right now, you said there's lots of players that are just getting undervalued at this position. Could you give me one for an example?
Adam Jones would be the perfect example. I mean, if you look at two or three years ago, Adam Jones was consensus like second round, maybe third round pick, and all of a sudden batting average goes down, he loses some steals, and everyone just pushing him off for the new and shiny guys. The past 3 years, just like with Nelson Cruz, you're looking at 85 home runs, 248 runs, and 261 RBIs. Now, the home runs, that ranks 8th among outfielders. Total runs score, or RBIs, 14th among outfielders. Runs scored, 7th among outfielders. I mean, he's given you top 12 value in 3 of the 5 scoring categories for fantasy. So, he hits 268. That still comes out to a top 30 average for outfield, and yet he's being pushed down almost to the 30th outfielder. He's got the consistency. There's nothing in his underlying numbers that say he's going to do any worse than he is right now. And again, you're getting consistent production as opposed to what you might get. So I think, just like Nelson Cruz, he's the safer play.
And sometimes it's all about just drafting the safer player, the best player available, and some consistency. And certainly Adam Jones has done that year in and year out. Another guy who did that last year, just across the board, I guess, Jim, was Adubel Herrera. I know he's only 25 years old. I mean, the home run power and the stolen bases jumped up a little bit from 2015 to 2016. How much of a leap forward do you think he can take in 2017?
I don't know if it's so much as a leap forward as more of consistent play. I mean, there's nothing showing in his numbers that shows he's going to take a step forward, but there's nothing saying that he's going to show any sorts of regression. His power numbers were a little bit high, 15. I don't know if he'll reach that again. I can definitely see maybe 10 home runs, a few more stolen bases, and he was batting between the first and second spot last year. So if they can maybe slot him down to the second spot, he can see a bump in production in RBIs. But overall, I'm just expecting similar numbers to what he put up. The team around him isn't that much improved to where I can see the production everywhere else going up, but I can at least see steady numbers across the board. No improvement, but no regression.
Who would you rather have, Adubel Herrera or Byron Buxton?
That's an easy question for me. I'm going with Herrera. I'm going with Herrera because Buxton, yeah, he's got the blue chip pedigree and everyone's all a rave for him. But 2015, he had a 32% strikeout rate. Last year, he had a 35.6% strikeout rate. Even when he went down, got set back down to the minors, he did well, but the strikeout rate was still 27.8%. He had that big month, September, where he hit 277 and 7 home runs, 16 RBIs, but the strikeout rate that month was still 33.6%. I mean, you cannot get through the majors with a strikeout rate that high unless your name's like Chris Carter or one of these other big power hitters, and even those guys don't have a big average.
You're right, Buxton. Jim. Unfortunately, we got to get out of here. Byron Buxton, and we don't know what to expect, but we appreciate your time. Jim, thank you so much.